From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to the latest edition of the Wildcast. I'm Zach Rosenblatt here with Justin Spears in the house with Maggie.
Little Maggie. See, I always appreciate anybody that has animals that are named after rappers. Shout out to our editor, Ryan Finley, who has a cat named Kanye.
Oh, yeah, he did. He told me that.
So, shout out.
If you're going to have a cat, you might as well name it something cool.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, latest Friday edition. Thanks for listening in. Last week we previewed the red and blue game. We don't need to analyze too much of what happened in the scrimmage other than, we saw some guys for the first time and it was exciting. Before we get into, usual stuff, over the last week, a few Arizona Wildcats have kind of been breaking out in the NBA and in levels like I don't think anybody reasonably expected. I'll start with Lauri Markkanen. I'm going to be honest, he's playing way better than I thought he would, especially this early, especially considering his limitations and considering how little talent there is around him in Chicago. I have his numbers right here. Like, he's averaging 16 points, 10 rebounds a game, shooting 40% from three. He had a really good game against the Cavaliers, and LeBron James was all like, I stayed up late to watch
Arizona games.
I stayed up super late. I thought it was hilarious. He said he's ragging on the Pac-12 for being on so late, but he's like, I watched the Arizona games, and Dwayne Wade was hype. Like, it's always interesting to see, guys like that kind of, he is a unique player, so it makes sense why, guys like watching him. I mean, he still has his limitations, of course, but he's been a better rebounder than I thought. And he's, the best player on the Bulls, which isn't saying much, but, did you expect Lauri to be the best player on an NBA team?
I didn't expect him to put up the numbers that he has right now, but, this all comes back to the Nikola Mirotic and Bobby Portis fight.
That did open up, because he wasn't going to start, right?
Yeah, he was going to come off the bench.
That's
so
true.
When those two...
So we can thank Bobby Portis.
Got in a scuffle. Thank you, Bobby Portis.
Hey, thank you for breaking Mirotic's face.
And it was even like that on the injury report when it showed the players that
did
are out for the
face?
Bowl that said Nikola Mirotic, face.
No way.
That's it.
Oh, my God.
So, anyways, he also said Lauri Markkanen. He also said an NBA record for most threes made
in his first three games.
In his first three games,
that's remarkable.
Think about all the great shooters that have been in the NBA, and Lauri
Markkanen.
And
he's a 7-footer.
That's a 7-footer.
That's a sign of the shift the NBA has gone. But even if you look, regardless of position and size, it's still remarkable that he did that. And then he's a 7-footer doing it.
And
it looks like he has the confidence that he might have lost a little bit at the end of his Arizona tenure there, honestly, too.
And here we are sitting here thinking, oh, man, Ben Simmons is a rookie, even though he's a second-year guy.
Yeah.
You have Markel Fultz, you have Lonzo Ball. But Lauri Markkanen is
already
in
the discussion.
Rookie of the Year case.
So Bill Simmons, a lot of the experts following, were pretty critical of, the draft pick. Because they traded Jimmy Butler, basically, for Lauri Markkanen, which isn't a great trade, but... A lot of people were critical of, the kind of player he is, and it's a little too high. His weaknesses are pretty glaring. Not a great rebounder, not a great defender, and not crazy athletic. But now my point being that I've listened to those podcasts, and they're all he's one of the surprises of the NBA season so far. Everybody's just loving this kid.
Well, Chicago had to turn the page with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
And that's why I was kind of questioning people that would say that, oh, they got Lauri Markkanen for Jimmy Butler. And it's I don't think that was really their intentions. They wanted to get a high draft pick and have at least young
building
block.
Well, the weird part of that trade is they also gave the Timberwolves, a draft pick also in that trade, which made it a weird trade. But,
true.
But we're not here to analyze the NBA trade.
Right, yeah, absolutely. But,
I could do that for hours. But
they got Zach LaVine. They got Chris Dunn.
Young guys, yeah.
And they got Lauri Markkanen. And
they clearly saw something in him that they thought he was worth that. So
And say there's... they may have a bunch of young talent and they try to make a pitch for an under the radar up and coming superstar that could potentially join Chicago in the future. So the way it's looking right now, Lauri Markkanen
still very early,
is
obviously.
True. Yeah, it's very early.
Yeah,
it's only been four games,
but it's a good sign.
The fact that LeBron James,
if a dude like that who says, beyond just being LeBron James, that dude is as smart of a basketball IQ.
Absolutely.
He can play every position.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah. And then on the other side, Aaron Gordon, talking about, it taking a little bit of time. everybody knew coming out that he was a raw player, like an athlete. He had to fix a lot of things. He could not shoot coming out of Arizona. He could not shoot free throws.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to tell you his line from the other night. Like, because it's unreal. Like, he had a superstar. He had scored 41 points, grabbed 14 rebounds. He shot 14 of 18 from the field, 5 of 5 from 3, and 8 of 10 from the free throw line. That's like a perfect game.
Yeah.
Like, shooting was always his question mark. Like, he's always going to have a place in the NBA because he's a really good defender, really good athlete, and a pretty good rebounder. But now he can shoot like he's an all-star level player with that. And, like, free throws, like, he had problems with that in Arizona. I think it was probably a mental thing more than anything because it got in his own head. You see that sometimes
maybe,
with guys.
Yeah.
But,
He was like a sub 40% free throw shooter here at UNL. Yeah, yeah. It was bad.
I mean, he's just a perfect example of, you know, people like give up on, I don't know if he was giving up on necessarily, but like people that follow sports give up on guys way too quickly. Like this dude was 17 when he came out, I think, or 18. And it takes guys some time. I mean, he had 3 years of learning and bulking up and being around NBA people, and you're just seeing kind of that come to fruition. So if he keeps on going up like this, like he's going to be a star.
Yeah, well, these NBA front office and scouts, they see stuff that we don't.
Yeah.
You know, we say that we're experts and we know all this, but they get paid to do that. And, you know, when Aaron Gordon was taken at number 3 overall, even I was kind of shocked because I thought he was going to be kind of more of an eighth pick.
He was projected lottery, but I don't think anyone expected that high.
It wasn't
going to
be that high. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, well, maybe the Magic see something that we can't. Maybe they see the project. I mean, people compared him to Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin, that was his problem coming out of college, was he can't shoot. He can only dunk. He can only get rebounds. And then Blake Griffin slowly started to get at it. And now Blake Griffin's a terrific mid-range shooter.
He can play point guard.
And he can even play point a little bit. So these guys, these NBA GMs and scouts and all that, they see potential. And when they really want to invest in a player, they really will. And it's also more mutual. If a player sees that a team is willing to take the leap and take them early on as a project, they're more willing to work for you. And Aaron Gordon's definitely showed it.
Yeah. And kind of like with Lowry, then just think about him. He's like Magic don't really have much around him also, so he's kind of like who they're building around too. So those are two Wildcats that are being built around, and they might even be around the same age actually.
It's great.
Yeah. Or pretty, because Gordon was so young when he left for the pros.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, I just thought I'd want to talk about those guys because I mean we talk about the same stuff all week, and they both have been like so good that I felt like it was just we had to talk about them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, so next week there's gonna be a couple exhibition games. Arizona, I think Chico State is the second one. What's the first one?
Eastern New Mexico. Yep.
keep an eye out for the upsets. Yeah. Well, actually, ASU almost lost to a Division II team.
Northern State.
Took two overtimes.
Didn't even know.
Like 2 days after I was like hyping up that I thought ASU is going to like have their year this year. Like literally like a day. Or the day of, actually. I was on Zach Clark's show talking about it. But, I mean, Arizona lost to Seattle Pacific that 1 year, and then they ended up not making the tournament at the end of the year, so maybe it's a sign of things to come for teams. But anyway, now they're actually going against other teams, like they'll destroy them, and we might not learn much, but like what are you looking forward to? Seeing DeAndre?
Yeah, I mean,
That's the obvious one.
Well, we already saw him at Red Blue game.
Yeah.
So I think him playing up against his teammates.
He's not
going to
be playing a
7-footer. He's playing against
he's
better
having much tougher competition in practice than he's going to for like the first few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So, what is he going to go up against? A 6'8" guy? You know, like the tallest player. I mean, Eastern New Mexico probably has.
I'm going to look up the roster right now while you're talking.
And those schools are like that all the time. You know, DeAndre Ayton, or was it last year, Lowry Markkanen, Dusan Ristic, they didn't see a 7-footer till what? Like,
that's the thing. I forget. You know? I think I was talking about this with Zach Clark. Yeah. Like, there's not many teams they're going to face that are going to be able to match up with 2 7-footers. Arizona doesn't have, like, quite the depth in the front court that they have. It's just them two and Keanu, really. Yeah. Not really. You can play, like, 4 or whatever. But that's also, like, nobody else has 3 guys that look like that either. So
it's
very interesting, like, especially with the way basketball has gone away from like traditional low post dudes like Dusan. But Arizona has like freaks of nature like DeAndre too. Like, how do you defend that guy? Like, that's what I'm most curious about.
You can't.
Even if you have a 7-footer who's athletic, like they're not athletic like him.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're not even going to play, you know, they're not going to play any of those guys that are projected to be top 5 picks. Like Mo Bamba, right? Isn't that the guy's name? Uh-huh. He has like 7'9" wingspan. They're not going to play that.
Yeah. And,
man. Yeah, it looks like their tallest player is 6'8".
So, yeah.
From Germany. Andre Hughes from Darmstadt, Germany.
Ooh, nice little Germany versus Bahamas action going on. Go. Is that Eastern New Mexico?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it should be interesting to see how that pans out. But, yeah, I was looking at Arizona's schedule the other day, and they're really not going to have a tough competition
after
Alabama.
So Chico State's on Sunday. Then they have Northern Arizona, UMBC. I don't even know what that stands for, to be honest.
Maryland.
Right. Oh, it's Maryland.
Maryland.
Right.
Something. I forgot the B word, but it's something college. All I know is that their mascot is the Retrievers.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, man. Can I bring Maggie to that game?
Absolutely.
Then they have CSU Bakersfield. God, poor fans.
Yeah.
So then they go to Bahamas. They play NC State and probably Villanova, which will be a very fun game, but
that'll be awesome.
Very far away from us. I'm curious what time that'll be at. So and then Long Beach State at home. Just looking at their first. So Texas A&M in Phoenix. New Mexico's in Albuquerque. Okay, Alabama on December 9th is the first home game where you can look at and be like, I'm excited to see that. I mean, we talk about it every year, but it's just fans are paying so much money for those tickets. It's probably more expensive this year with how good they are. It stinks kind of that they won't even do like a mid-level team. Like,
well, and that's not even Alabama. That's not even
They have like an NBA guy, but
a competition for DeAndre Ayton. That's more a competition for Trier. And,
yeah, but speaking generally about the thing, who's Alabama? Yeah, Colin Sexton will be fun to watch.
But
we can talk about the schedule for days. But the other home games. So it's Alabama. They have North Dakota State at home, Connecticut, and that's the non-conference slate. UConn. And Texas and Alabama are the only ones that you want to buy tickets for. But Arizona fans buy tickets for every game, so it just stinks.
And I'm more excited for UConn just because of Kevin Ollie. That's really the only
former Sixer.
Sixer great Kevin Ollie.
Yeah, he was on their 2001 championship team. They lost to the year Lakers.
Yes, sir.
AI stepping over Tyronn Lue. Great times.
It's a great time.
All right. On that note. We have a little something to play for you right here before we go to our next segment.
It's time to Ask Blatt.
All right, you heard it. I've been talking about hopefully we would get a jingle in here at some point for Ask Blatt, and we finally did. I got to respect the star, everybody that's been helping us create this and produce it, and Ryan Lopez and Rob Weisner and everybody that recorded it. Got to thank you for all that. We have three different versions of that. So we'll be going to that. I'm gonna open the Ask Blatt Twitter mailbag right here in a second. Before I do, you gotta check out the newsstands if you don't already subscribe to the Daily Star. We have our very special Arizona basketball special section coming out on Sunday. All of our stories will be trotted out online over the next couple of days as Maggie comes up here for some pets. Make sure you pick that up. I think it's like 36 pages. We have great content from myself, Greg Hansen, Bruce Pasco, PJ Brown wrote some stuff about women's basketball, Adia Barnes. I have one story that kind of chronicles Arizona's misery over the last 20 years, kind of breaking down everything that has gone wrong in each season. And it's kind of amazing to see, Arizona's going through a lot right now with this FBI thing and Raleigh Elkins' injury, but it doesn't hold a candle to some other years. So it's a story you guys should check out. On that note, we'll jump over to the Ask Blatt Twitter mailbag. As always, tweet it at hashtag Ask Blatt, or just tweet it directly at me, at Zach Blatt. And it'll make it onto the show. Let's go to the first question. Let's see here. All right, at StareLifeNJ, what are your favorite type of khakis? Oh, that's good. Chinos are pretty good. I don't really know that many brand names for khakis, but I do like wearing them. I'll say I wear them to most of the football games. I love that though. Love that. At _Boog1. Asked, what is the worst beer you have ever drank? Another great question. Milwaukee's Best. That tastes like urine. Anyone who's went to college has probably experienced it. My freshman year roommate was in some weird frat that nobody had ever heard of. I never heard of it. It's some weird combination of Greek letters. And they had the worst parties. And not to get my college life, but they had Milwaukee's Best at all of their stuff. I went because I was a freshman, not in a frat, so that was my only option to go where my freshman roommate was. And that was the most disgusting crap I've ever drank. And if you like beer, then if you've ever drank that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. At Just Gels, my friend Justin, he asks, what's the best way to tell your Twitter followers that you lost to your friend's girlfriend in fantasy football? This was absolutely ridiculous. So I went into the Monday night game. I'm an Eagles fan, if you don't know already. But I went into Monday night. I was beating his girlfriend, Becca, by, I think, 40 or 50 points. I didn't have anyone playing on Monday. She had, like, three players. But I figured I was in the clear. I think she had, like, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, and one other player. I look on Tuesday morning, and I lost by, like, less than 1 point. It was absolutely ridiculous. I hate fantasy football, but also I don't because in another league I'm 7-0, so it's not all bad. At DWLee200 asked, what happened to Gavin Robertson before Tony Fields' emergence? There was buzz around Robertson's transition from safety to linebacker. If you don't know who he's talking about, Gavin Robertson is a guy from Washington. He came here as a safety last year, as a true freshman. In the spring, they moved him to linebacker. And there's a lot of talk about him, probably because it was the spring more than anything. But while we haven't been talking about him, you know, he's playing on scout team. He's not really playing in the games, but he's young. He's learning a new position. You know, he's physically, he looks good. He probably needs to bulk up a little bit. He's super athletic. Even if he doesn't play this year, you can see him having a role at Arizona in the future, even if it's not in the next year or two. There are guys that, you know, Zach Green's a great example. Michael talked about him a little bit before. Or I guess after this, we'll figure out where I place this in the order. But yeah, he's a guy that is like Zach Green, who didn't play much his first two and a half to three years, and he's emerged as an important part of Arizona's running back rotation. At Amanda Obral asked, "What is the cutest puppy of all the cute puppies?" My vote is for the English Golden Retriever, and it's not even close. That's a good one. I would say Maggie, but I don't actually know what kind of dog she is because I rescued her 2 years ago, and all they had down was that she was Chow Chow mix, and she doesn't look. If you've seen, I've tweeted out pictures of her before. She doesn't look like a Chow Chow. All she has that's Chow is the tongue, but I'm impartial to French bulldogs too. I think those little guys are cuties. And my brother has a Puggle with his wife. His name's Jackson. He's a cutie too. So I guess we only had one actual sports question this week, but yeah, thanks for sending in the questions. You know, from here I'm going to call out to Michael. I chatted with him with Justin a little bit ago. If it's confusing about this order, it's because of timing and Justin having to be somewhere and Michael having to be somewhere. We recorded the intro, then we recorded the call with Michael, and then I went back to the Twitter mailbag, as you can see right now. And at the end of this, we're going to throw an interview Michael had earlier this week with Arizona quarterbacks coach Rod Smith. Mostly was about Khalil Tate, as to be expected. Shortly after we talked to them, either a day or a day later, he shaved his head in some weird way. It's worth looking up on Twitter. A bunch of us have retweeted it. He let his quarterback shave his head, I guess because of a bet he made about the UCLA game. If they had won, he would let them shave his head. We'll have to ask him details about it next week, but he's always a great interview, so I think you guys will enjoy that. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on the Apple Podcast app. Download Wildcaster app. It's on there. And read all our content at Tucson.com and on the Wildcaster app. Actually, I lied. I forgot one Ask Blatt Twitter mailbag question. It's from our most frequent questioner at DTaez22, Daniel Taez. I know him well. I didn't want to go this whole podcast without asking his question, because he's so faithful to the Twitter mailbag. He asked, with targeting calls increasing, is an adjustment to the rule coming, and what change could you see that being? You know, I don't see that happening. It's possible. The main issue with those targeting calls is just the lack of consistency. You know, Arizona's had a lot of controversial, maybe not controversial, but ones that were questionable, or, you know, as Richard pointed out, like, he thinks intent should be considered, but by the letter of the law, I think the ones that have been called against Arizona have generally been accurate, but there's also been ones that haven't been called that should have been. And, like, with the J.J. Taylor one, as we've talked about this week, like, the dude is 5'6", and he's blocking a receiver that's 6'2". Like, how else is he supposed to block that guy? It's, they should change it, or they should, you know, add the word intent to it. Like, I think intent is important, because I think the goal is to protect the players, and that's important, but if you're not being consistent with the call, then it kind of defeats the purpose, so... I just wanted to pop in and answer Daniel's question. I hope that was good. And yeah, now we'll go to my conversation with the guys previewing the game. All right, we got Michael, as always, on the other line. How's it going, Michael?
Hey, guys. What's up?
No donuts.
Yeah, no donuts this week.
It's too late in the afternoon for donuts.
I understand. You know, you can't, as much as I love donuts, I feel like you can't eat donuts every single week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't have donuts post 11
post
a.m.
lunch. Yeah. A post lunch donut.
I live right down the street from Krispy Kreme, too. It's literally within walking distance, which is kind of dangerous.
Donuts, but, man. Donuts are in.
Those are, that's in.
But yeah, Michael, happy to be back in Tucson?
Well, I love Berkeley. Berkeley's fun.
Good trip.
Looking for a place to eat lunch last week. Just got out of the car and started walking around town. And an animal rights protest happened by, like, right as I was looking for my lunch spot. So sort of like, man, maybe I should go vegetarian today.
They're just judging you as you drive by them.
Yeah, I didn't go vegetarian.
Yeah, we're happy you're being honest.
But hey, you know, I love Berkeley. It's one of my favorite spots in the Pac-12. It was a beautiful day. I mean, I know the game kind of started under the with the sun still shining. It became a night game, but man, it just felt like fall.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, we're gonna be going back to your old stomping grounds next week.
That's right.
Coliseum.
L.A.
You spent many late nights there.
Will we have a day game or will we have a night game?
That's a very good question. I'm really praying to the gods for a day game.
Day game.
Man, that would be
kickoff. I don't think people out there understand how much of a difference that makes for us.
Yeah.
And I also think, on the other hand, that people do care about this issue. I've gotten a lot of complaints from a lot of people about all these late starts for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. I mean,
so let's get an afternoon game. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, even just like for people who aren't traveling to the game for a road game, like late kickoffs are terrible. You can't do anything when the game ends at midnight, like.
Right. Yeah. Right. So just if people don't know, there are three possible start times for the USC game. One is 12:30, one is 7, and one is 7:45.
But isn't
not a lot in between. But
the pecking order though, isn't it like the first choice is the 7:30 or the 7:45 one, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
So weirdly, Arizona would, if they wanted the 12:30, they might have to lose to Wazoo, right?
Might be better off losing to play an afternoon game.
Do you think they would do that for us?
I don't think they care.
Yeah, you always say they don't care about us. You know, I don't like that. All right. Well, this is our weekly complaining about the schedule moment. It has passed. Now let's move on to tomorrow's game, which actually is at a reasonable 6:30. I like that. But yeah,
it's okay. Yeah,
I mean it's better.
Worse.
It's better. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about this game all week, but isn't this one of the harder games to get a read on? Wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I did not make my decision until I actually had to put the words down on paper
about who's gonna win
late Thursday for when I handed in my prediction. It's a tough one for a variety of reasons. One is that Washington State is really good, and they're really good on defense, which I don't think people really fully grasp, don't follow the Cougars on a regular basis. They're also kind of weirdly inconsistent as a team overall. I mean, they completely no-showed in that Cal game. They were not competitive in any way.
Yeah.
They were trailing Boise State 31-10 in the second half of that game.
I forgot about
that. Before coming back to win, and that's like, you know, that's an okay Boise State team. It's not a, you know,
Chris
a college
Peterson,
football
yeah.
playoff
yeah.
caliber Boise State team. So there's some uncertainty with them. And then on the Arizona side of things, you know, can Khalil Tate keep doing this? And are those defensive players going to be healthy enough to make the impact plays that Arizona absolutely has to have.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, what I guess this is a weird at this point, we just expect Khalil to keep doing what he's doing, right, until something else happens?
Well, I guess that's true, but it depends on, like, to what degree.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
I don't think we're expecting him to put up 500 yards of offense.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe 300 yards of offense is about the right range, which is right where he was against Cal. And are the proportions going to change? You know, I think, yeah, this is true. against the Golden Bears, it was the first time he had more passing yards than rushing yards.
Oh,
right?
Wow. I didn't realize that, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the first game, you know, he had 327 rushing yards and 148 passing yards or 55. Then he was, what, 230 rushing and 150-something, and then he goes down to 137.
Yeah.
And 166, and I think that trend might continue because their teams are just going to try as hard as they can to take the run away from him.
Yeah.
And I explore that topic in a story that's going to be on our website Friday evening in our paper on Saturday. It's kind of a look at the Khalil Tate effect and all the different ways that it affects the team and the program. And a couple of the things that I look at are how it opens up running lanes for the running backs and also opens up the passing game. So I think there's going to be an adjustment. And I think that Khalil Tate is perfectly capable of taking advantage of whatever the Cougars and future defenses give him in that regard.
Yeah. Michael, you were talking about Khalil Tate opening up the passing game. And last game against Cal, we started to see the surgence of Bryce Wolma, the tight end. And you even saw Sean Poindexter come up with a couple key catches. Just you kind of think that those guys keep up the trend? And how do you think that the passing game will fare out on Saturday?
Yeah, I do. Bryce Wolma is going to play a lot. Trevor Wood is out for this game because of a concussion. So, you know, the primary tight end duties are going to belong to Bryce. They're a little thin at that position. They also have Jamie Nunley and Jack Banda. And if they needed just a blocker, Jamardre Harris-Cobb could fill in on the wing as well. But Wolma has become a very reliable target for them. He just seems to have a really good knack for finding open creases against zones. He's reliable on third downs. He's better than I think a lot of people thought after the catch. He seems to already have a good chemistry with Khalil Tate, which might come from, you know, having, you know, played on the second team together. So yes, I think that will continue. As for Sean Poindexter, he was talking a little bit this week about how it's taken a little bit of time to get on the same page with Khalil. Because, you know, Sean ran with the ones throughout the offseason. So did Brandon Dawkins. So you're dealing with a different quarterback. That one play, the interception, you know, there was kind of a lot of blame to go around. Khalil took a weird-looking drop. He was kind of drifted to his right instead of taking a traditional straight drop back from center. Sean Poindexter initially was open down the sideline, but then he kind of slowed down. He misjudged the ball. There was a lot going on there. That play said to me, you know what, these guys aren't quite on the same page yet. So I think that chemistry is developing, and, you know, hopefully it'll get better as we go along here.
Yeah. And one thing to remember with Poindexter is that he's only played football for like 3 or 4 years. So he's still pretty raw considering he's a senior technically. I think they might try and get him another year if they can. I don't know how that's going to work, but yeah, I think that's something people forget with him. It's a little bit of an adjustment still.
Zach, you and I were talking about this earlier in the week. There's a missing year somewhere in the accounting for Sean Poindexter that could lead to him getting an extra year. We'll have to ask him and ask them about that a little bit later in the season.
Yeah. And so you wrote about J.J. Taylor earlier this week. If Nick Wilson's questionable, usually you assume – with him, at least, that if he's questionable, he's probably not going to play, or if he is, he's going to be limited. So, I mean, Rich talked about it. You and I talked about it. Last week felt like it was about to be JJ's breakout game. Do you see this? I mean, could that be, like, the difference in this game, even if JJ has his breakout?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I can definitely see him topping 100 yards in this game. And if he does that, they probably have a pretty good chance of winning. Now,
yeah.
The one thing I will say is that this, again, might be a Zach Green type of game, and I'll explain why. Washington State is not a big, strong defense. They are a defense that relies on speed and quickness and penetration. So it might behoove the Wildcats to use that hammer that they rediscovered last week in Zach Green and kind of pound away with those inside runs if, as Cal did, Washington State overplays the read option with Tate's outside runs. But, you know, if Nick doesn't play, and I think it is a safe assumption, if he's questionable, that he probably won't, I do like the combination of JJ and Zach. They have completely different styles, completely different games, and they complement each other really well.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I think that this is a good spot to jump to a little bit of predictions. Like, I mean, this game is tough to figure out. I feel like it could go a blowout in either direction. I could see it being very high scoring. I could see offenses struggling, but I think what I said earlier was I got Washington State 48, Arizona 45. I think it's going to be a really fun game.
Holy moly, that's a high scoring game.
I know. I know Washington State's defense is really good, but I think Arizona's offense is just clicking right now.
Yeah, you know, it is really good. And they have faced some good quarterbacks, including Sam Darnold. And the score of that game was 30-27, I think. And, you know, obviously Washington State won. USC had its problems and has had its problems.
Yeah.
Tate is just different.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't know if teams are, even though they know he's coming now, I still don't know if they're ready to deal with his athleticism. You know, I think it just shocks people the way he runs away. You know, J.J. Taylor was talking about his running style earlier in the week, and he said something to the effect of, it looks like he isn't even trying because he's just so smooth and it's so effortless. So I'll be interested to see how Washington State adjusts to that. I'll be very interested to see how Arizona's defense approaches Luke Falk. It has not gone well in the previous two meetings at all.
Least. Yeah.
To say the least, they need to hit him. And you know, I don't want to ever advocate like injuring somebody, but they need to hit him, and they need to hit him a lot, or else they're not going to win this game. So, all that being said, I'm going to go with Arizona 35, Washington State 34. Bit of a cop out type of score, not really super definitive either way. I was going to go with Washington State if the injury report had been less favorable, but
yeah.
You know, it looks like Derek Bowles, Kylan Wilborn, and Tony Fields are going to play. They're all listed as probable. I think that's a good sign. They absolutely have to have those guys. I'd say three of their top probably six defenders. They need those guys in this game. They need athletes. Last year, they were so depleted in that game last year up in Pullman that they had to move Tellus Jones to the stud position.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Kind of a safety who barely played started at linebacker in that game. That's kind of how low things were. They're obviously in much better shape now. So, you know, hopefully they will put up a better showing and at least make it competitive, which was not the case at all last season.
Yeah. All right, Justin, what you got?
Oh, man. I got a similar score to Michael. I'm going to say Arizona 37, Washington State 33.
So we all got high scores at least.
What I think is going to happen is Arizona will have that go-ahead touchdown, Khalil Tate running it in, making a miraculous play, and getting the go-ahead lead or the go-ahead touchdown. And I'm going to say Kylan Wilborn gets the game-winning sack.
Oh, like a game-ender kind of thing?
Kind of like, yeah, a game-ending sack where it's a key fourth down. It's
around
midfield.
I love the specific prediction. I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be around midfield. Luke Falk, it's going to be fourth and sixth. Luke Falk is in shotgun, gets the ball, looks around, scans the field, doesn't find anybody. Kyle Wilborn sack. Arizona gets the ball.
If it happens exactly like that, I'll give you $100.
Hey, I'm down. Yeah, you heard it here first, Michael. You're our witness.
This is on the record.
This is on the record.
I agree with Zach. I love the specificity of Justin's prediction.
I feel like we got to make that. I feel like we got to make this a weekly thing where Justin's specific prediction, where he just predicts the exact play. All right, we'll end on that note.
Do you know what food is going to be in the press box, or what he's going to wear to the game, or
predict Zach's socks?
Oh man, I don't know if I'm that. Was it Nostradamus or whatever his name is? I'm not that expert.
You're pretty talented, Justin.
Thank you.
Between me and Zach, there will be some plaid being worn. That I can pretty much assure you.
Are we going to match in LA again next week, Michael?
Not on purpose.
All right. Well, thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. Take care.
Wheels. Time here. What have you seen so far? What have you liked? Where can you get a little better?
Well, obviously he's made some plays, and he's been very dynamic, very explosive, which is what we were hoping for that he would be. And he's holding up his end of the bargain to that. Obviously, what we'd like to get better is we just continue to keep growing in the offense, continue to make better reads. There's some things that we've missed. He's been athletic enough that he's missed them and made a big splash play where some guys can't do that. So I think we keep cleaning him up, keep the decision-making process. You know, I think the pick he threw, he had bad fundamentals in our drop, and he just kind of locked on one guy and threw it up. And, you know, things like that that we just got to get better at. And he will. I mean, that's nothing abnormal. It's just a part of the developmental system mentally that he's going through, and he'll continue to keep getting better because he works at it.
Is that the kind of thing, just with more time, more experience, that he'll start to figure that stuff out?
Sure. I mean, it's like anything. To me, you learn best when you fail. When you fail is when you learn the most, I would like to think. And the key is you don't want to make the same mistake twice. And you know, that's what we constantly preach with you. You're allowed to make a mistake. You can't make the same one twice, and you can't let it beat us.
Rich has said that he seems to have a really good aptitude for when he makes a mistake. He seems to recognize it quickly and kind of figures out what to do the next time. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and that's a sign of him starting to really understand what we're doing. He may miss a read, and I could see it even from the press box. I've seen Patty's hip. If you ever seen two-hand Patty's hip, he knows he missed something in a read. He may have completed the ball, or he may have had a good play, but he knows he missed something. And you can see it, and that's the first sign of guys, when they can start correcting themselves, and they can tell you what they missed, then you know they're starting to get it. You may have missed a read, but you really start to understand the offense.
Did Cal do anything, especially in the second half, to stop the Khalil's runs that other teams hadn't done, or did they just play them really well?
Well, they did a good job of making sure that the perimeter was more secure than probably some other teams. They had some alley defenders there that were initially already there that were bound and determined not to let Khalil get on the perimeter. So they did a good job of certain things, but it's also why they were weak some up the middle was against that guy like Zach Green. That's why it's 11 guys, man. You know what I mean? One guy's not going to do this. He's been a huge spark for us. He's given us a lot of stuff. But that when they start taking him away, our other guys will step up. And that's what happened with Zach and JJ and Nick before they all had to leave.
Do you feel like there's a chess match going on between you guys and opposing coaches trying to figure out
It's always a chess match. Even no matter who the quarterback is, it's always how are they trying to defend us. You know, we try to talk to our quarterbacks about that, understand what they're trying to take away. Understand how they're trying to attack, because there's always strengths and weaknesses in everything people do, including offense. You know, so you got to understand what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, and you know, moving forward, and we try to help facilitate that as our teaching.
What have you been most pleased with Khalil since he's been taking over that starting role?
I'm seeing more leadership out of him. You know, he is exuding confidence. That's permeating our whole team right now, and it's lifting everybody up. And when he says something, ears are on him now. You know what I mean? He's taking more ownership of not just the position of the team. I see him constantly talking to defensive guys. I see him talking to our special teams guys. He's trying to be the vocal point of this football team, which is good. I love because, I mean, it don't have to be your quarterback. It don't have to be your quarterback to be your leader, but I love it what it is.
I think we're kind of seeing it now, but how much can a change in a guy like that at that position do that to a team?
Well, you're seeing it right now. I mean, he's having an effect, I think, on not just our team, but he's having an effect on defenses, other teams as well, in terms of how they prepare for him. They have to account for him a lot in everything they do. So, I think it's hugely important us moving forward. You know, him continuing to get better and better, and in all areas, on and off the field.
Rich has said several times that Khalil has looked faster in games than maybe you guys thought. Would you agree with that, or do you always think he's that fast? Or is he like when guys are legitimately chasing him, maybe he's got an extra gear?
You know what? I've known he could run. We timed him in the spring. He ran 4.56. In the spring, but that was at 220. You know what I mean? So he's lighter than that now. He's faster because I think he's in the best shape he's ever been in. It's game speed, man. You know what I mean? He's a different gear in game, I think. And some guys are just like that. I think he's one of those guys. And but you know, we knew he was a 4 or 5 type kid, even from the spring. And I think he's definitely showing that, or even possibly faster.
In camps, he used to talk about getting bored at times. Did you ever have to fight kind of getting him going in practice a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every day. Not every day. I mean, but every day we tried to motivate him to keep him on edge because, you know, and I don't want to say he's bored. He just turned 19 yesterday. So he's still an immature kid, but there's some times with some maturing that need to happen in terms of your attention to detail. And not just him, all of them. So that's why we're constantly prodding those guys, trying to keep them on edge and stay engaged the whole entire time.
Did you guys do anything for his birthday, Mr.?
He was sick. He's been sick all day. So I think he laid in bed most of the day. I talked to him several times. He'd come over, and he looked like death warmed over, so I said, get out of here before you make everybody else sick. But, no, I think he just kind of laid low yesterday.
To win the Pac-12 Player of the Week award for a third straight time, something that hasn't been done since 1988, what does that say about him and the job you guys are doing with him?
Well, I think it, one, it's a credit to him, but it's also the biggest credit is to the guys blocking up front and the guys in the perimeter and the guys running the ball. Like I said, it's a team effort. You know, whenever one guy gets accolades, it's not just one guy. It's the whole unit working together. Khalil's the focal point because he's getting notoriety right now. But he's doing his part, obviously.
Thanks, guys.
Good.
All right, that'll do it for Michael Lev and Justin Spears and Rod Smith and Lowry Markkanen and Aaron Gordon. That'll do it for the Wildcast. Check back on Monday. I'm not sure how it's going to work yet, but it's possible we change up our format based on when the basketball games are, because this time of the year they wind up being on weird days with weird times, but we might still keep the normal format, but there'll be a lot more basketball talk coming because exhibition games are coming and we'll be full force covering football and basketball. Exciting time. I'll be in LA next week with Michael, and but before that, on Monday, we'll recap and preview, and Greg Hansen will talk on Wednesday as always. Thanks again for listening.